Got a couple of incidents in and around, and we always have to have discussions regarding that. It's healthy to do that, to point out a little bit of the ineptitude that we hear about periodically. Here to discuss the new president of racism. Her name is Laura Harding, and all in all, racism is a regional civil rights organization based right here on Long Island that addresses the devastating impact of historical and ongoing structural racism, particularly housing and public school education. This particular one involving school education. Laura Harding is nice enough to give us a couple of minutes. We say a very good morning to you, Laura. And I'll tell you, when we heard about this comment from the individual from the Board of Ed out in Riverhead, I said, uh-oh. And sure enough, she got a lot of backlash, rightfully so, thus stepping away and resigning. Give me an assessment on your end, Laura. Welcome.
Good morning, Jay. First, thank you for having me. Let me say that I respect and appreciate that Lori Downs took the initiative to step down, but I also think that her statements and comments highlight a large problem on Long Island, and it's time that we start to address it. And we're seeing it reverberate throughout many of the school boards. This resistance and stereotypical kind of response to what we're seeing across Long Island in terms of an increase in the browning of Long Island, right? Both mostly Latino, but also Asian, South Asian. And, of course, we've always had our Black community. And the response is scary, that we have people who are in charge of our education system who, instead of working to help us bridge some of these cultural differences and understand that we're all here, we're all human, but we also are different, are instead kind of perpetuating a lot of stereotypical and problematic tropes about who our various ethnic difference, who our various people are, and that's problematic.
No doubt, no doubt about it. Maybe we got to do a better job vetting people periodically, and maybe we got to have them fill out questionnaires. It's happening way too frequently, I'll tell you that much. What do you think of that idea, possibly, about trying to crux of it all and make sure that, you know, people see a level playing field at all times here?
There's that, but here's the issue. If in your education system you are refusing to have culturally responsive and relevant curriculum that creates a place for everyone and that shares the contributions that everyone has made, then you're going to continue to have school board members who reflect the kind of thinking that Lori Downs does. I mean, we've had a rash of anti, and I put CRT in quotations because we're really not doing CRT in K-12 education, but there's this push to not have a conversation or not include the contributions of people from other cultures and other ethnic groups and other, I hate saying race is a social construct, but other races. And so, you know, Lori Downs could resign all she wants, but if we keep electing people like that and they keep controlling our curriculum, then we're continuously going to have incidents like this. And so a resignation is really like the first step, but, you know, Lori probably is saying things that many people feel.
There's a lot of stuff and then thus repeats it the way she did haphazardly. Without question, President of Race Racism, Laura Harding, with us. What do you think about the Suffolk County Executive, Laura, announcing yesterday the county creating a task force to specifically address the rise in anti-Semitism? We talk about the hate crimes and whatnot here, but here is something where, you know, we have seen this on the rise as well. I think it's something like 10 reported hate incidents so far this year. We're only 3 months in. What do you think of that idea?
I think I am a huge fan of Steve Ballone. I think that he has done some real substantive work around racial equity, and I think he's right on time with the task force. I think that we have a rising issue going on in our country where instead of coming together to kind of solve the issues that we're facing, we have a lot of questionable people and politicians who are emphasizing differences and blaming a lot of the issues we have on differences. And instead of having a responsible governmental response to things like housing and education, we have people who are really being divisive. And what I have seen, not only on Long Island, but across the country, are a rise of attacks, both anti-Semitic, anti-Asian. We just had one in Glen Cove, where I spoke at a press conference there. A lot, you know, the anti-blackness is always there. And so I think it's time that we as a country, and certainly on Long Island, come to terms with the fact that our community is changing, but that doesn't mean it's negative, right? And when we talk about erase racism, really focuses a lot on the historical and current impact of structural racism. And so it's so accidentally you think of things like Levittown and the role the federal government had in our housing, how the segregation on Long Island leads to a lot of this kind of hate crime and misinformation and stereotypes about who people are. We are segregated in our housing. We're segregated in our education. We have 125 different school districts that were basically created to maintain that segregation. And until we come to a space where we are respective of each other and we spend some time, right? Like, the more you get to know people, the more you get to realize that we're not that much different. Asian people, Jewish people, Black people all want the same thing that white people do. And I think we have to look at why, when it comes to other ethnic groups or racial groups, we are quick to take the worst and assign it to that entire group. But we never kind of do the same to white people, right? I was talking to some students at Adelphi the other day, and I said to them, you know, many of the people who commit gun crimes, these heinous gun crimes at schools, are young white males. But if a young white male walks into a classroom, you don't feel afraid. You don't assume that all white males are young white males are going to come in and shoot up the place. But we do this with other racial groups, and I think we have to get to the bottom of that. And part of that has to do with how we interact, how we live together, how we learn about each other, and how we spend time with each other. And when you have a Long Island is the 10th most segregated place in the United States. When we have a city, a town, a county, two counties like that, then you're going to continue to see a rise in these actions, especially when we have a lot of elected politicians pushing these kind of stereotypical tropes.
Got to kind of, you know, somehow get along, and we've got to do it together. That's the only way we're going to prosper. Talking with Laura Harding of Race Racism, there was a report today where both counties, Nassau and Suffolk, Laura, continue to rank among the 10 healthiest counties in the state of New York, but Black residents have the lowest life expectancy among all Long Islanders and the highest rate of preventable hospital stays. This is according to a study that was released yesterday. How can we improve that so that we have all residents with the lowest life of expectancies among Long Islanders here? How do we kind of get into that area?
I think some of that has to do with housing. It has to do with access. It also has to do with, and this goes back to the Lori Downs situation. What we know is that the issue of how Black people are treated when they seek treatment in hospitals and at doctors' offices, things like that, is that their reports of pain, their reports of health issues are usually trivialized. I mean, we saw this with Serena Williams. Right, you have a multimillionaire who literally almost lost her life after she had her child because the nurses refused to acknowledge and respond to concerns she had about her bleeding. And so I think that there's a lot of implicit bias work that has to be done in terms of how we respond to Black patients. I think there's a lot of education that has to be done with Black people around the fact that you need to go to the doctor before things get bad. You can't, the emergency room is not a doctor's office. I would also be interested in looking at who has access to health care, although we know that with the ACA and all of that, more people have certainly been able to access health care. And I do want to say this, and this is frequently overlooked when we talk about Black people in health care. You cannot minimize the impact of living in a discriminatory system and the impact that has on blood pressure, access to food. I'm wondering how many of these Black people, where they live, are they living in places where they're food deserts, for lack of a better word? Are there good supermarkets? You know, just thinking about the communities and what's afforded there based on where they're living.
No question. We all, you know, kind of witnessed some of this stuff during the pandemic, right? As far as access to vaccinations, in which, you know, we've got to kind of build on that aspect, you know?
Yeah, we do. Access to vaccinations, and also the fact that we saw how disproportionately impactful COVID was on communities of color.
I know you've been vocal. Yeah, I know you've been vocal. Last point here regarding affordable housing, and of course, a proposal by the governor regarding 800,000 units over a 10-year period, kind of a mandate in essence. A lot of backlash as far as this, especially here on the island, Laura. I know you've been vocal about it, but you know, there's some zoning situations involved here. There is a way of life from a suburban standpoint. Everything else, people are fearful of eradicating that whole thing. Give me sense as far as what you're seeing on this. Go ahead.
I think that you know, one of the things we know about Long Island is that we treasure what we have created, and we also are a little fearful of change. And I don't think that the governor's plan, if you take her plan piece by piece, depending on the village or hamlet or town that you're looking at, for some places you're talking about 1 to 3 houses that they would have to do. I also think that a lot of fear has been stirred up in terms of how this production of housing will look, right? What we do know is that across Long Island, exclusionary zoning has been used to maintain racial segregation. And in fact, what has ended up happening is that predominantly minority communities have bared the brunt of most of the affordable housing. And in fact, what we're saying is that the lack of housing on Long Island is affecting all Long Islanders. We have seniors who cannot downsize, right? I mean, I was just talking to someone the other day, and they were like, well, my father-in-law passed, and we had to sell the house because my mother-in-law couldn't afford it, and they can't afford to then stay in the communities that they have spent all this time in because there's no housing available for them. So we're losing the opportunity to pass down homes. We have young professionals who can't afford to purchase on the island, right? We just had a mayor who says, well, I'm not going to take these incentives, but I've got 3 grown children, a 30-year-old, a 27-year-old, and a 24-year-old living in my house because they can't afford to move out. But yet, there's a resistance to wanting to build housing. And we know the incentives don't work because we've had the Long Island Working Housing, the Work Housing Act, since 2008, and we haven't really built anything. I mean, we're seeing in Southampton, a resistance to building housing for homeless veterans, people that literally put their lives on the line for us. So it's clear that, you know, there's a resistance to doing this affirmatively, that incentives won't work. And if we really break down the governor's plan, many localities don't have to always meet the mandate. If they're unable to meet the mandate, they can ask for an extension, one, which usually leads them to 6 years. Two, they can say, hey, we can't do the transit-oriented development, but we're willing to do a level of downtown revitalization and build homes in this way. So I think that when we step away from the fear that Long Island will become, as many politicians are saying, Queens or the Bronx, which again is code for whatever ethnic, racial, you know, differences they want to play up, we also know that this plan does not mean that there will be extra density, and that in fact it allows local communities to get together and say, this is how we want to do it. Like, she doesn't tell you how to do it. You get like 5 or 6 options. But if you as a locality actually gather your community members together and say, hey, we have to do this, how do you all see this happening? I think we would be surprised about what we could do for our seniors, our young professionals, our veterans, our people with disabilities, and also our low-income residents.
Stop the fear. I do know, more discussions are needed. I do think I do think, Laura, what's good for Mohawk Valley, for instance, might not be good for Long Island.
Absolutely.
I think affordable housing is absolutely needed. It just depends where. The current one, you know, is a little sketchy. You know, Long Island Railroad stations and whatnot, a lot of people park their cars. Where do you go? I think more discussions are needed because, like I said, I think the landscape is a lot different where we are. And I think people are fearful of that. And I think you must have the communications line open. Hopefully, it will be. As far I know, she made made her way into Patchogue a couple of weeks ago, but I absolutely think more discussions are needed.
I agree with you, Jay. I think more discussions are needed. I also think that these plans do allow for locality. Her plans do allow for localities to design something that works for them. But I will say this. The One House budget has come out where, you know, the Senate and the Assembly have acknowledged that housing is an issue. And so what I am hoping is that there will be some compromise between the governor and, you know, the State Assembly so that we can fulfill the need for housing, not only on Long Island, but across the state, because it is a real thing. I have spoken to young white professionals who are making money, and many of them live on Long Island. I'm sorry, they work on Long Island, but they have moved to the city, they have moved to Queens. And so we really are at a tipping point in, I think, our economy on Long Island, where we have to ask ourselves, how do we keep our counties alive and vibrant, and have people see them as places of economic development, but also places where we can live, and to do that in a thoughtful way. And so we can't say no. What we have to say is how. And I think what the constant response from Long Island electives has been no. And no is not an answer. No is not an answer to a need that is impacting all Long Islanders.
This is, we need to have open communication lines. That seems to have disintegrated over the years. Somehow we got to get it back. I mean, that's the only way. The only way you get common sense solutions into play. We lack that. We lack that on the national scale. Yep, we lack it on the national scale. It's a trickle-down effect into the state and locally, too. And we got to figure it out of what we have lost over the last few years. Always a pleasure to have you on and discuss it. That is the key, Laura Harding, Erase Racism. Until next time, my dear. Thanks again.